Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 368. Welcome back. I hope you guys have all had a chance to check out the new design for the pin and the actual proof that's out there. So just thanks to everybody who has gone ahead and pre-ordered that. That lowers our out-of-pocket, enabling us to keep some funds in the podcast account and not have to worry about paying the bills while we produce some goods for the show and the listeners and producers. So just a huge thanks to everybody out there doing that. I have a few pieces for you this week, and without any delays, we'll go into those in just a moment.
The Whence Came You podcast is brought to you through the generous support of Masonic Revival, contemporary Masonic designs made for today's Freemason. You don't have to settle for throwing a plain old square and compass on anything anymore. Now you get something truly designed and truly wonderful. Whether it's aprons, awesome pins, and wonderful neckwear, bow ties, ties, pocket squares, you name it, Masonic Revival has it. Head on over to MasonicRevival.com and check out what they have to offer. And make sure if you see Brother Edgar, tell him thanks for helping bring this program to all of you. And this program is also brought to you by all of you, those of you who support this program. We can't do it without you and your donations and all of your assistance, so thank you so much. To find out more about how you can assist this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. There you can make direct donations, sign up to be a monthly contributor, a fellow, or even a producer. And thanks very much to everybody for donating.
So the first piece I have for you comes from 1926, October actually. It's a Short Talk Bulletin, number 10, volume number 4. And it's called An Erring Brother by Unknown. Next to the word mother, no word in our language has more meaning and music in it than the word brother. It is from above, and it reaches to the deep places of the heart. It is religion on its human side, and in it lies the hope of humanity. The highest dream of the prophets is of a time when men shall be brothers. When used Masonically, the word brother has a depth and tenderness all its own, unique and is beautiful beyond words. It tells of a tie, mystical but mighty, which Masonry spins and weaves between man and man, which no one can define and few can resist. In time of sorrow, it is a tether of sympathy and a link of loyalty. Of course, like all other words, it is common enough and may be glibly used without regard to its real meaning. Like the word God, it may be a coin worn smooth or a flower faded. But when its meaning is actually and fully felt, no other word is needed among us except on occasion of high Masonic ceremony. But when we add the word worshipful, or some other term of title or rank, no other word has a finer import or a more ample echo, expressive of the highest relationship in which dignity and devotion unite. If we are really brothers, all the rest may go by the board, save for sake of ceremony. If we are not truly brothers, all titles are empty and of no avail. For that reason, to omit the word brother when speaking Masonically is not only a lack of courtesy, but shows a want of fineness of feeling. What does the word brother mean, Masonically? It means the adoption of a man into an inner circle of friendship by a moral and spiritual tie, as close as binding as the tie of a common birth and blood between two brothers in a family. Nothing else, nothing less. And this implies a different attitude, the one to the other, related not distant, united, not opposed, natural, and unrestrained, wherein are revealed what the old writers used to call, quote, the happy and beneficial effects of our ancient and honorable institution, end quote. Since this is so, surely we ought to exercise as much caution and judgment in bringing a new member into the lodge as we do in inviting an outsider into the family circle. Carelessness here is the cause of most of our Masonic ills, frictions, and griefs. Unless we are assured beyond all reasonable doubt that a man is a brotherly man to whom Masonry will appeal and who will justify our choice, we ought not to propose his name or admit him to our fellowship. Still, no man is perfect. And the lodge is a moral workshop in which the rough ashlar is to be polished for use and beauty. If the lodge had been too exacting, none of us would have gained admission. At best, we must live together in the lodge, as elsewhere, by faith, hope, and charity, else Masonry will be a failure. The brotherly life may be difficult, but it is none the less needful. Our faith, in another way, may be repelled or even shattered. What then? Nothing in life is sadder than the pitiful moral breakdowns of a good man, their blunders and brutalities. Who knows his own heart, or what he might do under terrible trial or temptation? Often enough qualities appear or emerge of which neither man himself or his friends were aware, and there is a moral wreck. Some defect or will or taint of blood, some hidden yellow streak, some dark sin shows itself, and there is a disaster. A man highly respected and deeply loved goes down suddenly like a tree in a storm, and we discover under the smooth bark that the inside was rotten. What shall we do? Of course, in cases of awful crime, the way is plain, but we have in mind the erring brother who does injury to himself, his brother, or the lodge. An old Stoic teacher gave a good rule, showing us that much depends on the handle with which we take hold of the matter. If we say, quote, "My brother has injured me," end quote, it will mean one thing. If we say, quote, "My brother has injured me," it will mean another. And that is what brotherly life means, if it means anything, the emphasis being on the word brother or injured. Every master of a lodge knows how often he is asked to arraign a brother, try him and expel him from the fraternity. It is easy to be angry and equally easy to be unjust. If he is a wise master, he will make haste slowly. There is need of tact, patience, and above all, sympathy. Since all good men are a little weak and a little strong, a little good and a little bad, and anyone may lose his way, befogged by passion or bewitched by evil. It is a joy to record that Masons, for the most part, are both gentle and wise in dealing with a brother who has stumbled along the way. Masonic charity is not a myth. It is one of the first things on earth. What shall we do if we see a brother going wrong in Masonry or in anything else, spoiling his work, as the old Masons used to say? Well, we must take him aside and talk to him gently, man to man, brother to brother, and show him the right way. He may be ignorant, weak, or even ugly of spirit, driven by some blind devil, as all of us are apt to be. And if so, our tact and brotherly kindness may be tested and tried, but more often than otherwise we can win him back to sanity. Have you heard a tale about a brother, a suggestion of a doubt, an innuendo about his character, some hearsay story not to his credit? If so, did you stand up for him, ask for proof, or invite suspension of judgment until the facts could be heard, remembering that is your duty as a Mason to defend a brother in his absence? Such things are seldom said in his presence. It is not fair to tell him what is being said and learn his side of the tale. If we fail in our duty in such matters, we fail of being a true brother. When we have learned the truth and have to face the worst, what then? Long ago, we knew an old Mason, long since gone to the Great Lodge, who was chided by a brother for continuing to trust a man they both knew was taking advantage of the kindness shown him. The old man replied, "Yes, but you never know. I may touch the right chord in his heart yet. He is not wholly bad, and some day, perhaps, when I am dead and gone, he will hear the music and remember." End quote. And he did. Hear the music? Ah, if we would hear it, we must listen and wait after we have touched the right chord. And if the right chord is, quote-unquote, in us, something in him will respond, if he be not utterly dead of soul. If he does respond, then you will have gained a friend who will stick closer than a brother. If he does not respond, and alas, sometimes they do not, then we must admit, with a heart bowed down, that we have done our best and failed. Some inherent failings, some blind spot, has led him astray, dividing him from us by a gulf we cannot bridge. So a man should treat his brother who goes astray, not with bitterness, nor yet with good-natured easiness, nor with worldly indifference, nor with philosophic coldness, but with pity, patience, and loving-kindness. A moral collapse is a sickness, loss, dishonor in the immortal part of man. It is the darkest disaster, worse than death, adding misery to guilt. We must deal faithfully, but tenderly, firmly but patiently, with such tragedies. It is facts such as these that show us what charity, in a far deeper sense than monetary gifts, really means. It is as delicate as it is difficult in what we are all men of like passions and temptations. We all have that within us, which, by a twist of perversion, might lead to an awful end. Perhaps we have done acts which, in proportion to the provocation, are less excusable than those of a brother who grieves us by his sin. Judge not, lest ye be judged yourselves. Truly, it was a wise saying, not less true today than when the old Greek uttered it long ago, know thyself. Because we do not know ourselves, it behooves us to put ourselves under the spell of all the influences God is using for the making of men, among which the spirit of Masonry is one of the gentlest, wisest, and most benign. If we let it have its way with us, it will build up in virtue, honor, and charity, softening what is hard and strengthening what is weak. If an erring brother must be condemned, he must also be deeply pitied. God pities him. Christ died for him. Heaven waits to welcome him back with joy. He has done himself a far deeper injury than he has done anyone else. In pity, prayer, and pain, let our hearts beat in harmony with all the powers of God is using for his recovery. Quote, there remaineth faith, hope, and charity, but the greatest of these is charity. End quote. So there you have more of a poetic piece written for the Short Talk Bulletin regarding the idea of an erring brother, something that I think we all have seen or witnessed within our Masonic travels, careers, all of those things. Of course, this piece has an equally philosophic understanding of the word charity, and I really enjoy the bit in the paper where the author ties together the idea of judge not, lest ye be judged yourself, this idea of this Christian story from the New Testament Gospels. Really ties back to the exact same thing the ancient Greeks would say, the know thyself. So it tells me the author really pondered these things, and they are actually the same, to know thyself. Of course, a bit of Christian overtone at the end here, but I don't think, for those of you who are not Christians, I don't think that that negates the paper in any way. So I think it is a universalist teaching. But also, one of the other interesting parts within this paper, it challenged us to ask some questions about things we may hear about a brother, like gossip. And I'm reminded of the great Socrates, or Socrates. There was a bit that has been talked about and written about quite extensively, and if you just look up Socrates on gossip, you'll come up with something very similar to this. Socrates, the great philosopher, was once stopped by an acquaintance as he passed through the markets. The following is a conversation. I've something important to tell you, he said. It's about your friend. That's very kind of you, Socrates said, but don't tell me just yet. I run all information through the three filters test to ascertain if I want to know it. The man looked somewhat puzzled as Socrates continued. First is the filter of truth. Whatever you want to tell me, have you seen or witnessed it firsthand? I actually heard it from someone, the man said, and it is from a trusted source. All right. But that does not pass my first test, Socrates added, since you don't know whether it's true. Second is the filter of goodness. Is that a good statement you want to make about my friend? Not really. That's the reason I wanted, Socrates interjected. So you want to tell me something bad about someone, but don't know if it's true. The last is the filter of utility, he continued. Your statement about my friend, is that going to be useful to me? Not really as much. I just wanted to share. Well, if the information is not necessarily true, it is not good, and it is of no use, Socrates concluded, please, I don't want to know about it. I think that's a good corollary. It ties right into parts of this piece, so I hope you enjoyed that one. All right, the next piece I have for you is on Masonic education and comes to us from the Masons of California, the California Freemason Magazine. This one is from March-April 2017, as we are going to be approaching a feast date here soon in the near future, whether that is anybody out there who celebrates Thanksgiving, or maybe you celebrate the Feast of St. Andrew for our Scottish brethren, or one of the Saints John. One coming up here in December. This one might be of use to you. This one is called The Moral Feast, Table Lodges, in the 18th century doubled as schools of morals and manners. This is by John L. Cooper, the third past Grand Master. And of course, permission to reprint or share this article comes from the California Freemason Magazine, and we just want to credit them for their hard work on the magazine and for letting us read the article. Questions and comments, you can contact the editor on this one at editor@freemason.org. But here we go. The Moral Feast. In recent years, students of Masonic history have been intrigued by table lodges and festive boards in Freemasonry, sparking a revival of interest. We know that most lodges in the earliest days of speculative Freemasonry held their lodge meetings around the dinner table. Eating and drinking were mixed in with the more serious business of conferring Masonic degrees in a unique fashion. Early minute books place great emphasis on procuring food and drink for the brethren, and some of the earliest lodge officers were stewards who sought a brother's comfort by keeping their cups full of liquid refreshment and making sure that each brother had as much food as he could comfortably manage. What is less known, however, is the societal etiquette that these quote-unquote lodges at the dinner table taught their members. The number 7 is prominent in our Masonic ceremonies. Today we are familiar with the 7 virtues and principles, 4 cardinal virtues and 3 principal tenets, and the 7 liberal arts and sciences. Prominent in the minds of our 18th century brethren were also the 7 deadly sins: lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. Many Masonic rituals refer to Freemasonry as a place to quote-unquote erect temples for virtue and dig dungeons for vices. So, if a Mason were to quote-unquote dig dungeons for vices, what would he imprison therein? The answer is in the list of deadly sins. Each vice is a negative of a positive virtue. Lust is the opposite of love. Gluttony is the opposite of moderate eating and drinking. Greed is the opposite of careful shepherding of our resources. Sloth is the opposite of energetic activity. Wrath is the opposite of concerned engagement. Envy is the opposite of appreciation of the good fortune of others. And pride is the opposite of humility. And what better place to practice virtues and imprison vices than at the dinner table? In the beginning, Freemasonry blended convivial and ethical societies with teachings intended to shape members' behavior. The sociable atmosphere of the festive board and its cousin, the table lodge, offered an ideal place to practice the virtues that a Mason was expected to imitate. Brothers learned that there were proper times to eat and drink, to conduct ritual, and to listen to lectures on the symbolism of Freemasonry. Masonic customs arose in response to this need, and they are still part of our ritual and customs today. The 2 most prominent items on the table at Masonic banquets in the 18th century were the warden's columns. When the senior warden's column was upright, the brethren were symbolically informed that the lodge was at labor and that eating and drinking must cease. When the column was lowered and the junior warden's column raised, it indicated to the brethren that the lodge was, quote-unquote, at refreshment, and that eating and drinking could proceed. To further emphasize that indulging inclinations and desires must be subject to good manners and respect for the needs and wishes of others, when the junior warden was installed in his office, he was reminded, "To you is committed the superintendence of the craft during the hours of refreshment. It is necessary, therefore, that you should practice moderation and discretion in the indulgence of your own inclinations, and that you carefully observe that the means of refreshment are not converted to improper or excessive use." We still tell the junior warden this when he is installed in his office today. Additionally, every entered apprentice is told, "Temperance is that due restraint upon the affections and passions which renders the body tame and governable, and frees the mind from allurement of vice. This virtue should be your constant practice." It is well to remember that in the 18th century, when an entered apprentice heard these words, he would have been in the lodge's banquet room with feasting and drinking going on all around him. It is probable that the explanation to the candidate was also intended to remind the Masons present that they too should exercise, quote-unquote, that due restraint upon the affections and passions that was being impressed upon the new Mason before them. Lodge minute books from the 18th century frequently refer to fines levied on brethren who forgot themselves and engaged in behavior around the table that was not befitting of a Mason. Many of these fines relate to the abuse of Masonic courtesy toward others and to behaviors that are clearly associated with eating and drinking too much. Lodges frowned upon those Masons who did not understand that they were supposed to be quote-unquote digging dungeons for vices rather than parading them around the lodge room. Of course, not all Masons or all lodges consistently understood this. One of the most famous engravings of the 18th century was created by Brother James Hogarth, a member of the Hand and Apple Tree Lodge in Little Queen Street, London, who served as Grand Steward for the Grand Lodge of England in 1735. This engraving, quote-unquote, Knight, tells a story about one lodge, its worshipful master, and its tiler. I will leave it to you to study the engraving, shown here, and to figure out whether this lodge and these Masons understood the seven deadly sins that all Masons want to avoid. All right, and if you would like to see the picture, I would encourage you to go on over to freemason.org and hover over News and click on California Freemason, and then in the 2017 box, you can click on the March-April 2017 issue, or I'll just have a link to the exact website address in the show notes.
Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to wcypodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Bankers Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Bankers Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to wcypodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Bankers Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with Onnit. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to Onnit, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to Onnit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out.
And that's it for this week. I want to once more thank all of our producers. And I do have to make an apology. I had here October 24th, Kenton Lodge. Actually, Kenton Lodge, I will be presenting on November 4th, which that will be a Skype presentation called Long Been in Darkness, an Exploration of Traditional Candidate Preparation. So if you're going to be in the Buffalo, New York area, check out Kenton Lodge. Go there, and I'll see you via Skype. The next thing I have after that is going to be December 3rd at Lafayette Lodge. We've got some things lined up for 2019 already in June and August and July. Notably, sometime in June, maybe Atlanta, Georgia, August 8th, I think we're going to be at Camp Masonry in Toledo, Ohio again. And if you're interested in having some Masonic education at your lodge or Skype or whatever, go ahead and shoot me an email, wcypodcast@gmail.com, and super flexible on that stuff. The only thing I ask for is just travel. So you get me there and back and give me a place to sleep and we'll be good. So again, thank you all so much for listening to the show. I hope you all enjoyed. I hope you guys have a wonderful Halloween. Those of you who had to have your kids go out on the Sunday before, my kids went out today to trick-or-treat. This is Sunday, the 28th of October, and my kids had to go trick-or-treating from like 2 to 5. Yeah, I know, it's terrible. When I grew up, it was Halloween. Trick-or-treating was on Halloween, and there was no time limit, and we went well into the night. Alas, Illinois does not allow us to do that in my particular area, so we are the Sunday before relegated to about 3.5-4 hours in the middle of the day. Kind of a bummer. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox, since that's not very Masonic, and I hope you guys all have a wonderful Halloween, and be safe out there. Until next week, stay on the level. For Once Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.